Yes, it does. Welcome into a Friday. Glad you could join us on the show today. Got a jam-packed show. We're going to touch a lot of different topics on the program today. High school basketball tonight, live from Delta High School. We got a full slate of big matchups tonight in the semifinals of the Boys County Tournament. And then we crown a couple of county champions tomorrow night at Delta High School starting at 5:30 or so. Hope you all are staying warm dry because it is it's nasty out there. It really, really is. Amazingly so, and Steve and I were talking about it on the Delaware County Today radio show this morning on WMUN. I've never seen a radar like I did this morning. So Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I'm up at the crack of dawn, if you will, and, you know, got to get a lift in, right? Gotta, even though I'm not on video every day, but I guess I am on Facebook Live right here, gotta look good. Yeah, you know, that's part of it, even though the face isn't gonna really get a workout or anything. Anyway, basically, there was a green ring just around Muncie, which indicates rain. All around that in East Central Indiana was blue. That was snow. This was at like 6:30 this morning. I don't know what it looks like right now. And then there was like a thunderstorm in Central Indiana. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, man. Indiana weather is truly legendary. It really, really is. But all the joking aside, make sure you're safe out there. There are so many local events happening over the weekend. I did see Monroe Central altered some of their practices and schedules today. That's the first I've seen of a school that is altering some of their practices. So make sure you just double check that things are happening the way that it is. So your calls are welcome at 765-287-1340. At Mark WMUN on Twitter. We're going to talk some Ball State men's basketball here in a little bit. That'll be coming your way. Also, we're going to have George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin talking Colts. Because of how busy it has been this week, we haven't really talked much about the Colts offseason stuff and the comments by general manager Chris Ballard yesterday. So we'll get George's thoughts. We haven't talked to him since what occurred on Saturday. Monday, the reaction to that game pretty much dominated the show, but really, since that point, we haven't even talked Colts at all. Not even close. So we'll do a little bit of that coming up. And then, of course, tonight, Delaware County Tournament, the semifinals of the boys' matchups. The pregame coverage begins at 5:20 here. Rob Fisher, who is the analyst on our high school broadcast, will be joining us coming up at 4:25 to give us a breakdown of what to expect tonight. So 765-287-1340 at Mark WMUN on Twitter. The other bit of previewing that we will do is the coaches show is back again tomorrow, live from Crestview Golf Club and Mulligan's Clubhouse Grill. And, you know, we certainly talk about the high school product that we have on this station with both football and basketball and Delaware County Tournament and all those different things. But a really neat deal happening right now, and that is what has been deemed an emerging sport and now an IHSAA sport in girls wrestling. The state finals are happening as we speak, and there is great representation from Delaware County, Muncie Central, Daleville, Westdale, to name a few schools. And by the way, those athletes are doing quite well. Daleville has a wrestler that will wrestle for a state title in girls wrestling. Westdale has a couple of athletes that are going to be guaranteed a top eight finish in the state finals. And again, I think it's just darn cool when you have more of that. Speaking of wrestling, last weekend, Delta, the 2A state championship. Obviously, they have exciting things coming up with the IHSA state finals. This is the Coaches Association state championship as they went up north and defeated Jay County for that championship. So we're getting to that time of the season where championships are going to be awarded. That girls' wrestling state finals being held at Kokomo's Memorial Stadium right this moment. And from the pictures of it, it looks absolutely jam-packed. I love following social media for this. It is a lot of fun. A lot of fun to see how all of that plays out, for sure. Okay, Ball State men's basketball tonight. Tomorrow night, a matchup with Toledo. That one's on the road for Ball State men's basketball. And, you know, we had some good conversation about this week, about where Ball State is right now. I think it's clear from the way you look at where they are in the Mid-American Conference. Clearly, they need to make a little bit of a run here. But I do think that opportunity is coming. I really, really do. Now, Toledo right now is one of three teams that are 3-0 in conference play. If you remember a year ago, Toledo was the regular season champion. Kent State ended up being the tournament championship, so they represented the Mid-American Conference in the NCAA tournament. But it was kind of a shock at the beginning of conference play when Ball State beat Toledo on the road. For some reason or another, Ball State has always matched up very well against Toledo. Now, different personnel, a different year, totally understand all of those circumstances. But for some reason or another, Ball State has always played very well against him. Now, on the road and away from Worthen Arena, because, you know, on the road doesn't necessarily put it in perspective about the neutral site game that you had at Gainbridge Fieldhouse against Indiana State. Want to make that very clear. But at the end of the day, Ball State has lost 5 in a row, but away from home has really been part of the issue. They have not won. They've only won one game away from Worthen Arena so far this season, and that came in a 3-point win against Detroit Mercy, which right now, Detroit Mercy, at the time when Ball State beat them, were 0-9. Detroit, as we speak, is 0-17 in last place in the Horizon League. Now, again, there's a lot of ball to be played. And by the way, the encouraging signs that you saw against Akron earlier this week should make you think they're closer to getting a win on the road and closer to competing on the road than they are not. But it is certainly something to be brought up. You know, it's you're 8-7. You're 15 games into the season, and right now you have just one win away from home to show for it. So again, you can do your damage at home, but you also have to take care of things on the road for sure. So you know, it's kind of an interesting deal. And one of the things that I thought that they really figured out on Tuesday night is through the first 37 minutes of that basketball game, there was just a confidence of knowing how to execute and knowing how to work the game plan and not allowing a team to kind of take you out of it. That game felt like a Ball State game rather than an Akron sort of inflection on the game. And, you know, I've talked about over the years how you inflect your style on a basketball game and how important that is in the end result. You know, if you make a team play your game, maybe you have a better chance of winning said game. You know, you really can't prepare for a team knocking down three threes at the top of the key in a minute and 12 seconds that completely flips the game. But Akron did it. And look, as we talked about yesterday about Ball State women's basketball, who's at the top of the Mid-American Conference right now after three games of play in their league, you know, you talk about, hey, when you don't have your best and still find ways to win, that's really a nice feeling. Akron kind of experiencing that on Tuesday night. I'm not sure they played their best. You got to give credit to Ball State, but you also got to give credit to Akron for finding a way to win, and that's what some of the best teams find ways to do. Akron and Ball State are in two different perspectives right now. We'll see what happens here in these next couple of months to put Ball State in that position. You really have 2 full months, 8 weeks, to kind of get you in the realm of being ready for whatever comes. Now, right now, just so you know, again, it's three games into Mid-American Conference play. There are five teams that are over 500 after three games. That's Akron, Toledo, Western Michigan, Bowling Green 2-1, and Central Michigan is 2-1 through Mid-American Conference play. So the point of the matter is this. The other teams, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other teams are 1-2 or 0-3. Ball State, 1-2 teams, 0-3 in conference. Northern Illinois, 0-3. Like, you're not really talking standings at this point right now, because it's so early on for everybody, including the teams that have gotten off to a really, really good start. Just to give you an idea about that. But also, you would love to put yourself in a position after next weekend in the middle of the conference, in those top 8 to 10 spots, to put yourself in striking distance to be right around the middle. Because right now, it's not exactly like you're saying, oh yeah, hey, we're a win or two away from being near the top. You started off with wins last year in the Mid-American Conference. This year, you're 0-3. Now, everything is so focused from the coaching staff to this team on, hey, what can we take care of in this particular game coming up? It's a singular game focus. I remember when we had Michael Lewis on the program, it's like tunnel vision having it on what you have in front of you. And Toledo's good. I don't know if Toledo's as talented as they were a year ago, but it's such a consistent program, and there's a reason they won the regular season a year ago. So you're going to have your hands full with that, but then that stretch that we've been talking about, you're at Eastern Michigan, home versus Miami of Ohio, at Buffalo, back-to-back home games against Northern Illinois and Bowling Green, and those five games are all very winnable. Very winnable. You know, you're right there in the mix to kind of see where you're at with everything. You know, if you want to put it in perspective, Akron, the top team in the Mid-American Conference, beat you in the last 3 minutes. You had chances to win against Central Michigan, who's also 2-1. So two of the top five teams through three games, you've given them everything that they could handle through the end of the game. So optimism, I think there should be some. Now, do you feel good about where you're at? Absolutely not. You don't. So, again, I feel like there's pressure on Toledo in this game, even though they're at home. Kind of like the way I felt on Tuesday. I don't feel as strongly that Ball State could really, really make things difficult for like they did for Akron on Tuesday. I think this is a little bit of a different challenge going on the road. But I do think that when you have a team coming in and on paper it looks like you should have this crazy advantage, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And having it in the evening, all those different things, we'll see how it plays out. But I got to tell you, it's the time here in the next couple of weeks, you got some urgency moments coming up, because you can't fall too far behind. Just can't fall too far behind. No doubt about it. So, Ball State women's basketball in action again as well. They're 3-0, and again, I just love the fact that it's all been about finding ways to win. Now, the schedule's going to get a little tougher here, as Ball State has Bowling Green coming up. Ball State's 13-2, first in the Mid-American Conference right now. Bowling Green, one of four teams that are 3-0 in Mid-American Conference play. And it's been Toledo, it's been Bowling Green that have consistently kind of been at or near the top that Ball State women's basketball has had to battle with. You know, there's a lot of talk about Toledo. Toledo is the most consistent in both men's and women's basketball in the Mid-American Conference. But Bowling Green has certainly been there too. So this will be a nice test for Ball State. It's at Worthen Arena, and that occurs tomorrow, and it'll be a good one. Two out of the next three games are big ones for Ball State women's basketball, because you have Bowling Green coming up on Saturday, Central Michigan on the road coming up next week, and then you're right back at it with Toledo happening at Worthen Arena. So you're going to see two of the better teams in the Mid-American Conference in these next three games. So a very, very pivotal stretch for Ball State women's basketball coming up as well. So that's kind of what's going on with Ball State women's basketball. Ball State men's volleyball had a matchup last night. We had Donan Cruz on the program. I love those conversations with Coach. It was a lot of fun. And, being back home and obviously the challenges that exist in early conference play certainly put a lot of stress on you, like you had with BYU and everything along those lines. But you know, coming back home, as was mentioned before, so different. I mean, just incredibly different. So Ball State had a matchup with UC San Diego that occurred the other day, you know, having it at home and all the different things around it. Ball State 3-0 sweep over UC San Diego. So a couple of matchups tonight, or one tonight, one this weekend. Tusculum University, back-to-back matchups, one tonight at 6, one tomorrow at 6 as well. So Ball State men's volleyball in action. Then they have Trine, and then they go for a little bit of a West Coast trip. A couple of matchups in Austin, Texas, one against USC, yes, that USC, and Stanford. So the schedule is certainly going to get more difficult as we head down the road for Ball State men's volleyball. So that's a little bit of a rundown of what to expect this weekend. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live, as you always do. So we're going to talk with George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin coming up here in a little bit. General Manager Chris Ballard spoke with the media. Spoke with the media. And, you know, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how the philosophy changes for for the Indianapolis Colts. I just saw something that came across me, Ball State related. So the Colts have a quarterback on a rookie deal. Now, that's significant from a lot of different perspectives. One, you're kind of in an interim period to kind of find out, hey, are you going to bring this guy back and him be your franchise quarterback? So you're almost kind of surrounding your operation to enhance what Anthony Richardson does, even you saw him in very limited fashion. That being the case, that being said, the biggest elephant in the room with all of this, you are not paying him top dollar quarterback money. And you've seen over the years, teams really benefit from having a quarterback on their rookie deal. The Seattle Seahawks are a great example of this. The Kansas City Chiefs have won with a big contract with Mahomes, but certainly won when he had a rookie scale contract very early on in his career. So usually this is the window where you can kind of be aggressive and make some things happen around him, whether that be playmakers, whether that be defensively, whether that be whatever. And it's always been the knock on Chris Ballard. And that was the majority of the conversation when he spoke with the media yesterday about just how aggressive he's going to be. Because I think everybody wants to know, hey, okay, you took these steps forward, but are you going to capitalize on it? Are you actually going to be a player in the marketplace to really make a difference on this roster? Because I got to tell you, it's a luxury, but also maybe an indictment on the construction of this roster by saying, hey, at number 15, you can draft really any position other than quarterback and maybe other than running back. Obviously, I don't think you're going to do that with your first-round draft pick. So you can really go best player available, which is great. But usually when you say, oh, yeah, we can take best player available, it means you're really sound at every level of your operation. That's not the case. The deal is you can pick best player available at your spot because you don't really have eliteness all around your roster. You need another wide receiver. You could probably bolster up your offensive line. You need a go-to tight end. Your defensive pass rush was good but can be better. Your secondary needs a stud. And then your linebacking core, while Zaire Franklin has been a nice find for you, yeah, you could use some dynamic natures to your to really every level of your defense and most of your offense. You're not going to get it all done by getting rookies, because if you're going to make a run at it and feel like you have upward trajectory here, you're going to have to get veterans in the building. And how do you do that? You got to spend money. Now, there's a way to be overly aggressive, and I thought Ryan Grigson did that when he brought in Andre Johnson and Frank Gore and that whole crew. And again, it's been scrutinized. LaRon Landry, it's been scrutinized for years, okay? But there's a healthy balance in being passive and being aggressive. And I think that balance this year is going to be very important for the Indianapolis Colts, and I think very important, especially at wide receiver and playmaker. You have to surround Anthony Richardson with players. And if Michael Pittman Jr. doesn't come back, you no doubt about it, have to make a heavy, heavy investment to bring in a couple of dynamic playmakers at wide receiver. And maybe even tight end, because we don't know what Jelani Woods can do. He didn't play all year. You had a group of three tight ends that did a little bit of something. Each one of them did, but man, you do have a lot of areas to make things better. You really, really do. So, anyway, we will have George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin coming up. That's coming your way right after this on The Power. Talk amongst WMUN. Yes, welcome back, Power, on this Friday. Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Well, I don't know if there's been anybody busier. Well, there's been a lot of stuff happening, but George Bremer would qualify for the top five this week with the Colts coverage and the multi-conversations. George, you think the season ends on a crazy note, obviously, last Saturday. You have a couple days to react, get some quotes, those sorts of things, and the news cycle continues because the NFL never stops, right?
No, and then it got hijacked there by college football for a minute with Nick Saban, but the NFL was like, oh, we can top that with Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. So, yeah, you know, never ending. It does, fingers crossed. Seem like it could be a quiet offseason for the Colts, relatively speaking. Maybe really for the first time. I was thinking about this earlier today. Maybe for the first time since they were going into the 2015 season where they have a head coach and they have a quarterback that they feel confident will be the starter that season. I think it's been that long where there's really no question in either of those two positions.
Yeah, quiet from that standpoint, but I think Colts fans don't want it to be quiet when it gets to the most important times of the offseason, and that was the majority conversation with Chris Ballard. I want to get to that here in a little bit. I was in the building on Saturday, not in the cushy press box. I could see you all the way from the 600 level on the opposite end, George. I saw you very, very clearly. I did not, but we can all pretend. Obviously, the ending is the majority conversation. That being said, could you make the case Houston was the better team on Saturday? And I don't know if you do the deserve start to finish. They were the team that executed the best.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the difference in the game, ultimately. They made fewer mistakes. And that's how it usually goes in these sort of playoff, you know, caliber games. More of them are won than lost. More of them are lost than won. You know, and I felt like the Colts lost the game. I mean, that final drive obviously is going to stick in everybody's mind, but you had a missed field goal earlier than that. You had, you know, a couple other opportunities where there were plays to be made, and the Colts didn't make them. And it felt like every time, pretty much with the exception of maybe that last extra point, every time the Texans had a chance to make a play, they did. They made their field goal. They, you know, had the two long – the really long touchdown pass at the beginning of the game. You know, they came through with the drives that they needed, the plays that they needed when they needed them. They absolutely deserved to win the game. But I also think if you're a Colts and you're walking out of there, you're thinking this could get really interesting in the future if there's a healthy Anthony Richardson involved.
Yeah, what about that game? Because I remember us talking in preview of that game last week and just kind of mentioning, hey, what would the reaction be after the game? I don't think it was so much, wow, what a disappointing year, you didn't get to the playoffs, as much as people knew that was on the line. It was more so a big moment and the Colts couldn't come through again. Was it more the latter, you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it's always going to be disappointing. When you're 15 yards away from a division title, as everything turns out, you're going to regret that for a while. It's going to linger over the offseason. But at the same time, I think they knew, you know, going in there, Houston's got a rising young star in C.J. Stroud, who's going to be a problem for this franchise for a long time. Obviously, D'Amico Ryans did at least as good a job as Shane Steichen this year as a first-year head coach, and that's going to be a really interesting clash to watch over the next few years because you've got, you know, an offensive-minded head coach here in Indy, a defensive-minded head coach there in Houston, and then they're literally going to go head-to-head for the foreseeable future. But I think people understood going in, this wasn't a guaranteed victory. So I think that does limit some of the, I guess, anger. But at the end of the day, yeah, you're sitting there. If you finish that drive, you're hosting a playoff game this weekend. And the knowledge that that didn't happen is going to sting, and it's going to sting for a while.
And, you know, all of that being in the right perspective, saying, hey, you didn't have the player that you likely are hoping to build this franchise around, and yet you were still at that point. Like, maybe we get to that in about a week or two, but it's so fresh right now. Like you said, 15 yards away, we don't touch that, really. It's all, hey, you had the opportunity, and you didn't cash it in.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of stuff, you know, that's going to be talked about down the road. Not having Richardson for but four games this year. Really only had Jonathan Taylor about half the year, a little more than that, but about half the year. And in part of that, he was obviously ramping up, getting back to himself. And it felt like every time he got close to you know, the level that he's capable of, he got hurt again. Until right there on Saturday, where he's really the reason they have a chance. The reason it stings as much as it does is primarily because Jonathan Taylor rushed for 188 yards. If he doesn't do that, Houston probably wins that game pretty easily.
Yeah, no question. It's George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin with us. Okay, what was your general takeaways from what Chris Ballard had to say yesterday?
You know, largely that he's very encouraged by what's coming. You know, I think it's obvious what they were able to do this year. When plan B and C and D were necessary, they just constantly, it felt like something new was coming up every week. Someone was getting suspended. Someone was getting injured. You know, there was some new crisis to be overcome pretty much week in and week out. They still were able to put together a winning season, come so close to their first division title since 2014. So I think the overall feeling in that building right now is this is just the start. You know, the future is extremely bright, and that's what Ballard was talking about. But I think they also understand nothing that happened this year counts for next year. You know, the only thing you're guaranteed is what you were saying, that you were 15 yards shy of winning a division title. Beyond that, you don't start in that same spot. You know, everybody's going to be 0-0 again here in a few weeks, and you've got to rebuild it. That's what Shane Steichen said earlier in the week. You've got to rebuild everything from scratch now. It's going to be a new team. You're going to want to bring back as many of these guys as you can. But changes are inevitable in this league. You're never going to have the exact same group together again as you did the year before. And they've got to rebuild everything, the mindset, the work ethic. You know, I think Ballard mentioned the biggest thing this year that was accomplished is that they became a team again. They were one functioning unit again. He felt like they got disconnected late in that 2021 season. Obviously, last year, that it just never came together. And really, from day one with Shane Steichen, it was about bringing this back together. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody's going in the same direction with the same goal. And I think that's a big part of why they feel like, even though this year ends in such horrible disappointment, they really feel good about where they are going forward.
Okay, let me ask this. The most optimistic unit from this year that not only you feel is good right now, but can even take a step forward is what group?
For me, it's the offensive line. I mean, they're just so important to everything that you do. And they had such a big bounce back year. And they went through as much as anybody in terms of, you know, how many games did Braden Smith miss? They had to play once without Bernard Ryman. They had to play a couple times without Ryan Kelly. I think Quentin Nelson was the only starter who played all 17 games. And yet, you know, there were a few games where they didn't live up to expectations, but they were always better than they were a year ago. Their worst game this year was probably better than their best game last year. And I think you feel like there's enough young guys. There's the right mix there of young guys who can continue to get better, like Raymond over on the left side and Will Fries at right guard, and veterans and Braden Smith, who if he has a healthy year, and Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson, where that's a group that could be even better next year than they were this year. This was a tremendous bounce back year for them.
The unit that needs the most work.
Defensive backs. I mean, Allard was pretty open about that. They knew that they were going to take their lumps with such a young cornerback group. A lot of guys got a lot of experience there. They would have loved to have gotten even more experience for Juju Brents and Dallas Flowers, but injuries kept that from happening. Jalen Jones got thrown into the fire. They feel like they have a player there. But, you know, he said they've got to get especially more consistent play from free safety. That's where Nick Cross, Rodney Thomas were. They both had flashes, but they didn't do it week in, week out the way that they need that to be done. And I think they feel like that group, between the experience that they'll have coming back, and I think that's where you're going to see some talent added. You know, and they've got to re-sign Julian Blackman. They've got to try to re-sign Kenny Moore. There could be a lot of changes on that back end, and it's probably the one that needs to take the biggest step forward. The defensive line did a really good job. 51 sacks, a franchise record for the Indianapolis era. You know, they had a really strong year up front. But if you really want to make the most of that secondary's got to improve.
Yeah, I mean, these are the names that are unrestricted free agents for the Indianapolis Colts. Cornerback Kenny Moore, safety Julian Blackman, wide receiver Michael Pittman Jr. Of course, you hope he's the backup next year because that means Anthony Richardson plays, but Gardner Minshew is up as well. Defensive tackle Grover Stewart. Those are some pretty notable names. Of those four, who would you be shocked about not being back with the Colts next year?
Pittman, because it's not going to be easy. Ballard even mentioned, you know, you just have to pay whatever the market is, and the market for wide receivers right now is extremely high. But I would think at least they're going to franchise tag him. You know, if it comes to that, I think they'll franchise tag him, make sure he's still here. It would shock me if they let him leave with everything that he means to the development of Anthony Richardson. You've got Jonathan Taylor in-house now, locked up. The next obvious thing to do is lock up Michael Pittman and let those three grow together, you know, into the future.
Every year, right, this time of the year, there's that cautious optimism that, hey, Chris Ballard's going to be a little bit more aggressive. And you know what? He always brings in a little bit of a, hey, we're going to be as aggressive as we need to be. And he said that again. You know, he's said similar things like that. Why, if you're a Colts fan listening to this right now, should you believe this is finally the year where you see just that slightest bit more aggression in surrounding this team with some more veterans?
I think the biggest difference this year is the quarterback's on a rookie contract. You know, you're not paying big money to Phillip Rivers or Matt Ryan or Carson Wentz, and you're not having to use a lot of the offseason researches to find that guy. You know, and finding those guys to begin with took such a big chunk of each of these offseasons recently that's just not going to be there. You know, you don't have to worry about that. You can worry about building the other spots. Richardson's obviously on that rookie deal, and I think that's one of the things that Ballard, you know, really talk about. It does give you more financial flexibility. Now, I think a good chunk of that cap space might go to in-house guys because
right.
of what you just mentioned. There's a lot of guys who need to be signed, and ultimately they might be the ones who end up with the biggest deals, but they definitely are looking for explosive players. You know, whether that comes in free agency, whether it comes in the draft, whether they're more aggressive that way and moving up or at least not moving down, it remains to be seen, but the one thing that he said very clearly is they want to add explosive playmakers on both sides of the ball. So however that gets done, I think you're going to see that be the focus of the offseason.
Well, 8 months of it. Are you ready, George?
I think I am. It feels like it's weird. It feels like this season kind of just blew by. It honestly feels like it was like last week that we were talking about who's going to be the head coach of this team.
Right.
It all was just one giant, you know, dash to the finish from last, what, February to today. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to an offseason without maybe so many questions hanging over the future of the franchise.
Yeah, it's a good thing. George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin with us. George, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yep, no problem. Thanks a lot, Mark.
That's George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin. As always, great stuff. We'll step aside and come back after this. Power Talk on Muncie WMUN. Yes, we're brought to you in part by Sheriff Gosselin Roofing. Your roof is there to protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Gosselin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com. Well, this is a story that you will never see at Lucas Oil Stadium in downtown Indianapolis. So as we know, there's some weather rolling through the eastern United States. My brother lives in Chicago, and they're getting some snow and those sorts of things. But there's a bit of a wild card big matchup in Buffalo. It's Buffalo versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I believe the game is, it's Saturday night. So this was just posted to the Buffalo Bills website. And this is the case. Snow shovelers needed at Highmark Stadium for a wild card game versus the Steelers. If you're interested in doing it, the rate of pay is $20 an hour. Complimentary food and breaks will be provided through the shifts in a comfortable, warm environment. Those interested in shoveling must have proper photo identification to work. They are asking the community to come help them shovel the stadium for the game that night. I get it, but I got to tell you, that's just flat out awesome. That is flat out awesome. And again, just another way that sports fans are a community that are owned, because I guarantee you there are people lining up to do this and help out the Buffalo Bills. That's pretty good stuff right there. So, all right, when we come back, we're going to talk some high school basketball with Rob Fisher. That's coming your way right after this.